Dear listeners, before we start today's show, a quick announcement. We are back with a new season of our tech podcast, Our Own Devices by Nandagopal Rajan. This is a weekly podcast which discusses and dissects trends and reflects on the world of tech in India with the who's who of the tech world. The third season will start today at 4 p.m. and will be available on our website and app and everywhere you get your podcasts. The video version can be seen on our website as well as the Indian Express YouTube channel. Do tune in every Monday at 4. The link to the show is in the description. Hi, I'm Rahim Philippos and you are listening to Three Things, the Indian Express News Show. In this episode, we talk about the right to use forest resources. We also give you a quick update on the row over Law Minister Kiran Rijiju's recent comments at the India Today conclave. But first, we talk about the controversy over Rahul Gandhi's comments in the UK. Last month, the senior Congress leader gave a lecture at the University of Cambridge where he said that the Indian democracy is under attack and that several politicians, including himself, are under surveillance. Now, these comments were severely criticized by the ruling BJP and several leaders even described them as anti-India. But a week later in London, Gandhi again created controversy for his comments on the working of the Indian Parliament. And these comments seem to have enraged the BJP so much that it has accused him of breaching the Parliament's privilege and insulting the country. The BJP has also asked the Lok Sabha Speaker Om Birla to set up a special committee of the lower house to see whether he should be suspended for his comments. To understand the political implications of this entire row, we speak to the Indian Express's Liz Matthew in this segment. So Liz, can you first begin by explaining to us what it means to breach the Parliament's privilege?
See, breach of privilege includes a lot of things. Here, it is not just a breach of privilege. It is, they say, his comments on Indian democracy outside India in London has brought contempt to the Parliament's dignity, and his remarks about the speaker switching off his mic, these things, which according to BJP has never happened. So it was a lie and it was wrong. So this has defamed India and Indian Parliament. That is why he brought contempt to the House and hurt the dignity of the Indian Parliament. This is the allegation they are making.
And Liz, what exactly did Gandhi say that's generated so much controversy and, you know, because of which the BJP wants to suspend him?
See, three things. One is that he said that everybody knows that Indian democracy is under attack. And he said that the institutional framework, which is required for a democracy, parliament, a free press, the judiciary, just the idea of mobilization, these are all getting constrained in India.
Everybody knows, and it's been in the news a lot, that Indian democracy is under pressure, is under attack, right? I'm an opposition leader in India, and we're navigating that space. What's happening? The institutional framework, which is required for a democracy, parliament, a free press, the judiciary, just the idea of mobilization, just the idea of moving around, these are all getting constrained. So we're facing an attack on the basic structure of Indian democracy.
This was during his speech at the Cambridge University on February 28. Later in March 6, during a discussion, he said that it is an Indian problem and the solution is going to come from inside. That is what you think. But however, the scale of Indian democracy means that it is a global problem. If Indian democracy collapses, democracy on the planet suffers a very serious, possibly fatal blow. So it is important for you too. Then he went on to talk about the MPs are getting detained and also the mic is put off during his speech inside the house. He was not allowed to speak, which BJP says the initial statement has brought defame to India. Second, it has brought hurt the prestige of Indian Parliament. And he made comments outside India, outside the house, about the chair's decision. You know, in parliament, both houses, the speaker in the Lok Sabha and the chairman in the Rajya Sabha, their decision is final. House is supreme, chair's decision is final. So actually, even the judicial court cannot question the decisions of the presiding officer, I mean, the speaker or the chairman, respectively in the Lok Sabha or in the Rajya Sabha. So their contention is that this kind of statement about the decision of the chair, which is a lie, according to them, and also commenting on the house and the speaker outside is not good. It actually breaches the privilege and also brought contempt to the court. These are the issues which have eked or kind of antagonized the BJP.
Right. And the BJP wants to set up a separate special committee to probe whether he should be suspended for these comments. But why do they need a special committee? Because there's already a committee in the Lok Sabha which deals with these concerns, right?
There is a privilege committee in each house, in the Rajya Sabha and the Lok Sabha, when it comes to the privilege of MPs, whether it is breached by someone else outside or whether an MP has breached. Like, for example, if we do a story or a report which is not supposed to be out, which is a confidential matter from the standing committee meetings, if we report it, they can give a privilege notice to the chairman and in the Rajya Sabha and to the speaker. So then it can be taken up by the privilege committee of the respective houses, and they can summon the journalist, summon the editor, and they can take action. They can bar that particular media from covering parliament. There are so many provisions like that. Like if an MP is getting arrested or somebody is misbehaving with him or her outside, that is a breach of privilege. It's a breach of the MP's privilege. It has a lot of scope. So that such cases are, there are so many privilege notices in front of privilege committee. But here in this case, Rahul Gandhi's case, the contention BJP leaders are making is that there are so many issues before these committees. So this will be one among the many. Since it is very important, according to BJP, it has to be dealt immediately. There has to be a quick remedy for this, whatever happened. So a special committee has to be formed to see whether Rahul Gandhi should be suspended from the house unless he apologizes.
Right. And Rahul Gandhi said that he won't be apologizing because he believes he didn't say anything wrong in the UK. But tell us what a special committee usually comprises.
So usually a special committee is like a 3-5 member committee, including members from different parties. That committee can have a daily sitting, and within a few days, it can submit the report. And if that committee is recommending a particular action against an MP, it can be brought to the House, and the majority votes that will be taken as a decision and the action will be followed.
And considering that the majority of the parliament is the BJP, can you tell us what kind of concerns this may raise?
Definitely, see, but you know, obviously the speaker and the ruling party can decide, like obviously with their advice, the speaker is the one who is setting up the committee. So he can have one or two members from the ruling party and its allies or friendly parties who may not agree with Rahul or opposition. This can happen. So obviously their will prevail. But you know, here there is a precedence to it. We had a case in 2005, one website, Cobra Post, was showing the MPs are taking money for raising questions in parliament. And 10 MPs from Lok Sabha and one from the Rajya Sabha were involved. There were more, but you know, these people were found guilty by the committee. A committee was set up. Then it was UPA government. Congress leader Pawan Kumar Bansal was the chairman of that committee. And that 5-member committee, within a few days, they submitted the report recommending expulsion of these MPs. Out of 10 MPs from the Lok Sabha, 6 were from the BJP. So in that, there was a member from BJP, E.K. Malhotra. He had a dissent note and he put up the dissent note along with the report, but it didn't get any support in the House. The House overwhelmingly supported the committee's decision and voted to expel these MPs. Interestingly here, I was there in the Lok Sabha when the debate happened. Some MPs, even from the ruling side that time, which is the Congress-led UPA, they had warned, even while supporting the motion of the House, they have warned that this will set a bad precedent. Tomorrow, anybody can raise such issue and constitute a committee and initiate this kind of action against any MP, even for trivial issues. So this has to be led by the judicial court. That was what some MPs had said. And the BJP also had the view. But then Parliamentary Affairs Minister Priyaranjan Dasmunshi, I still remember saying the will of the House will prevail. So there is a precedence that despite the opposition's objections on such decisions, the majority of the House will prevail. And obviously, in a democracy like ours, it will always be, even if it is 3-4 members plus majority, the majority gets to have their way. So in this case, in the current Lok Sabha, BJP has a brute majority. The party itself has 303 out of 543. So obviously, BJP will have clear dominance in this decision and they will have their way.
And Liz, if they actually have their way and Rahul Gandhi does get suspended, could you talk about the implications this will have on the Congress, on the BJP, as well as on the country's politics?
See, it will have political impact. The only other impact will be, technical impact will be, suspension is obviously not expulsion. So suspension is for a time frame, like there will be stipulated time. That time, he will not be able to perform any duty as the representative of his constituency, which is Wayanad in Kerala. Having said that, I must say it has political impact. The BJP also, it's not very sure whether they will go to that extent. They are trying to put the pressure. Here, there are 2-3 issues that I have to mention. There is a general feeling that since BJP, the ruling party, does not have major bills or a legislative agenda, legislative business before them, this is an allegation the opposition is making. They are not very keen on running the House smoothly. Politically, for them, a more damaging will be having a discussion in the House because there are so many issues before them. It's not just the Rahul Gandhi speech or the so-called attack on institutions. It is the Adani issue, the Hindenburg report. There was no proper discussion happened. That is there. And there are this BBC documentary issue. There is this, you know, other inflation and all the other issues involved. And the opposition keep talking about this India-China border issues. Since all these issues are there, the general feeling is that in the backdrop of what is happening, like in the G20 meetings and all the world's attention is on India, the government doesn't want to have any debate where they are coming under attack from the opposition. That is one thing. Secondly, the Karnataka election. The Karnataka election is the immediate one, where the Congress and BJP are going to have a direct fight. Second is that it's not just Karnataka. It is like, you know, all the elections, key, very important election for both the parties are coming up this year, where Chhattisgarh, Rajasthan, Madhya Pradesh, in all these states, big states, and all these states, it is Congress versus BJP. So it is very important for BJP. All these states, BJP have internal issues. The House is not in order. It is very important for them to project. It is Prime Minister Modi versus Rahul Gandhi. That narrative is very important for them. So it will help BJP if this present campaign against Rahul Gandhi complain. But at the same time, there is another view in the BJP that if you, you know, obviously Rahul Gandhi's is not such a grave statement which would call for suspension from the House. If such a drastic step against him, a drastic quote-unquote punishment will bring sympathy for him and Rahul will be seen as somebody who is like trying to fight in a very hostile atmosphere, that could give him more support in the state. That fear is also there. So it is a political war, it is a political game, and it is the narrative that party wants to set. So these other things, the rules and conventions, precedents, all these are used to, you are just to help the party in this narrative.
And next we talk about the forest and the right to use its resources. In India, millions of people rely on forests for their livelihood and for whom forests mean home. This is one of the reasons why the Forest Rights Act allows the scheduled tribes and other traditional forest dwellers to use forest resources and also protects them from unlawful eviction from forest lands. However, a committee comprising the Forest Department officials, local Gram Sabha members, and the members of the Forest Dwelling Committee decides who all would be able to do so. Those who think they actually qualify for it even have to submit applications. And turns out, in Karnataka, over 83% of these applications were rejected until November 2022. To talk about why these applications are being rejected, we speak to the Indian Express's Akshiv Thakur. So Akshiv, can you start by talking about the reason why some people are allowed to make claims on forest resources under the Forest Rights Act?
Right. So the government came up with the Forest Rights Act in 2006. The aim of the government with this legislation was that to undo the historical injustice that has been meted out to the scheduled tribes and other than forest dwellers communities who were primarily residing in the forest for generations and have been evicted out due to development projects. So this was the intention of the government. Now, the claims under the FRA for the scheduled tribe, so the scheduled tribes will have to fill up the application and they have to prove that they have been primarily living in the forest areas or on the forest land before December 13, 2005. Other than forest dweller communities, they have to fill in the form. They have to say, they have to prove that they have been living in the forest and the forest land for the last three generations. That comes around roughly to 75 years. These are the claims.
And in these cases, the scheduled tribes and the forest dwellers actually have to make claims under different parameters. So what is the reason that this distinction exists?
There is no logic as such, but this is another point of contention that has been there for a very long time, that the scheduled tribes, it's easy for them to prove that they have been living in the forest before December 13, 2005, while the OTFDs have to prove that three generations have been living on the forest land. So this distinction has been there primarily because the government feels it also comes around tribals and non-tribals. This sort of a distinction that the non-tribals are basically seen to be kind of encroachers. Okay, which is also true in most of the cases, you know, during my interaction and field visit with the forest officers, this has also come to the notice. So primarily this was the thought behind coming up with this sort of a distinction.
Right. And could you talk about how the scheduled tribes and forest dwellers benefit if their claims are accepted?
So if the claims are accepted, so first thing is that they will be allowed to stay in the forest land and utilize the forest resources. So the forest resources as in such that, you know, firewoods and fishing, agriculture. So these are the things which if they are dependent on this, if they have been dependent on the forest resources for generations and for years and have been evicted due to the development projects. So that's the major intention, that you can still continue doing your profession and be dependent on the forest resources, because again, then you can take out the forest resources and sell it out and then make some money.
And you've written that in Karnataka, 83% of these claims were rejected. Do we know the reason behind these rejections?
So the claims basically not only in Karnataka, but across the country, this has been the stats. Now, basically, these claims get rejected because these scheduled tribes and OTFDs, they are sometimes unable to prove their living and dependence on the forest areas. And a few years ago, the Supreme Court has come out with a directive that those whose claims have been rejected should immediately be evicted from the forest, because the forest department and even activists, and they have always been in tussle with each other. The activists and the NGOs used to claim that the forest department has been illegally evicting the tribals out of the forest areas, and they are rejecting the claims on flimsy grounds, whereas the forest department used to say that, you know, there have been deliberate, after the enactment of FRA, there have been deliberate attempts to encroach the forest land. So what usually happens is that the state government constitutes a district level committee, or a SDLC, what we call it here. So they decide and they see through the claims whether they are right or they are wrong, or the cases are genuine, or these just come around in order to encroach the forest. For example, in the cases of OTFDs, other than forest dwellers, now there is a rule which is legally accepted, is that if any senior citizen of the village would say that, yes, this family used to live on the forest land, you know, three generations ago, 75 years ago, that will also be accepted. But usually then the forest department say that, see, this is again a very flimsy ground. How could you, you know, then go around, and in that way, anybody can claim that, okay, he or she has been staying on the forest land for three generations and they will immediately encroach the forest land.
Okay, so you mentioned that this seems to be happening across India, where claims are often rejected on flimsy grounds. But could you talk about how often these claims get accepted by the respective committees, and what factors actually help the scheduled tribes and forest dwellers with their claims?
Yeah, so they get convinced because once you file the application, then the committee will actually review the land. They are going to, you know, go for the assessment if the claims are genuine. And if the proof which you file before the committee, if they actually feel satisfied, you know, about it, that the claims are found to be genuine and they are really dependent on the forest resources. So the committee actually, you know, accepts the claim. In most of the cases, there have been occasions where they have been accepted. Now, the main issue due to which the forest department or the committee actually pulls back their legs is because of the encroachment. So here in Karnataka, the encroachment cases in Shimoga region is very high. Now, ironically, this has been the case after the enactment of the FRA is what the forest department tells us, that the trees have been illegally felled and then the applications have been filled.
Right. And could you give us an example that could sort of help us understand this problem a bit more?
Yeah, so there are cases, for example, presently in the High Court, the matter is sub judice. So here in Karnataka, there is a rule that, okay, if the encroachment of a land is below 3 acres, then the forest department is not going to take an action until unless, because the guidelines are yet to be framed on that. But if the encroachment is above 3 acres, then the forest department has been directed that they can go and evict the encroachers. Now, there is a family here who under the FRA have individually filed the applications claiming rights over the land. So the total encroachment is 4.34 acres. And now this 4.3 acres have been divided among the three family members. So father takes in 2.34. The mother takes in some and the son takes in some. So individually, they say that, see, it's beyond 3 acres and you cannot evict us. That's the argument that the petitioner and the eyes of the forest department is an accused has actually have filed before the court. So now in this case, the said person is also said to be owning a store here, a shopping mart here. And then they are claiming their rights over the FRA basically. And also there is a lot of political involvement in it, wherein the political parties, in order to woo voters, they actually make them say that, okay, you can go and settle down in the forest areas wherever you want to. And then in the FRA, they are going to take care of it. So this has also led to a mass scale of forest encroachment. And this has been the case in Karnataka, in Maharashtra, Madhya Pradesh, Chhattisgarh as well. So there is no doubt about it that, you know, sometimes there is a lot of injustice also in this case. But this also cannot be ignored that there has been a mass scale of forest encroachment here in the Western Ghats regions as well. And mostly after the enactment of the Forest Rights Act.
Right. And Akshiv, after a claim is rejected, do the scheduled tribes and the forest dwellers have any other avenue to sort of secure their rights to forest resources or appeal the decision by the committee?
Yeah, so once the claims are rejected, they can go for an appeal. That appeal has to be filed within 90 days. So this will again be reviewed. And sometimes the appeal even goes up to the High Court and then the case actually goes on. So if once they file the appeal, then the committee will again review. And then again, the claims are found to be genuine, or if they are not found to be genuine, then their applications will be rejected. So this is the only relief which they have.
And in the end, we quickly go over Kiran Rijiju's recent comments at the India Today conclave, which drew flak from the opposition. On Saturday, the law minister flagged what he called, quote-unquote, a calibrated effort to undermine the Indian judiciary and turn it against the government.
Recently, there was one seminar. I was not aware of the seminar in Delhi. Some retired Supreme Court judges, some senior lawyers, some people were there. The topic of the seminar was accountability in judges' appointment. But the discussion whole day was how government is taking over the Indian judiciary.
He also said that some retired judges are part of the anti-India gang and they are trying to turn the judiciary against the government like the opposition parties.
It is a few of the retired judges, few, maybe three or four. Few of those activists, part of that anti-India gang. These people are trying to make Indian judiciary play a role of opposition party. Some people even go to the court and say that, please rein in the government. Please change the policy of this government. These people want Indian judiciary to play the roles of opposition party, which cannot happen.
These comments receive flak from the opposition. Congress General Secretary of Communications, Jairam Ramesh, tweeted, and I quote, "A law minister talking like an outlaw. a minister of justice propagating injustice. If this is not a threat to freedom after speech, what is, unquote.
CPIM leader and former Kerala Finance Minister Thomas Isaac questioned whether Rijiju is the minister for law or lawlessness.
The law minister during the conclave, while answering a question on actions being taken against the Tukre Tukre gang, said that anybody who walks against the country will have to pay a price.
Nobody will escape. Don't worry, nobody will escape. Those who have worked against the country will have to pay a price for that.
Reacting to the statement, the Trinamool Congress Rajya Sabha MP Jawahar Sirkar said that a minister can't make such a statement and get away with it. While Swaraj Abhiyan member and senior lawyer Prashant Bhushan said, quote, a fellow who is unfit to be a munsif is threatening judges, unquote. Referring to Rahul Gandhi's recent remarks in the UK about Indian democracy being under threat, Rijiju said efforts to undermine the Indian judiciary were being made both inside the country and abroad.
Anybody, if Rahul Gandhi or anybody says that Indian judiciary has been hijacked or democracy is over in the country, the judiciary is dead, what does it mean? There is a calibrated effort to undermine Indian judiciary. That is why day in, day out, they are saying that government is trying to take over Indian judiciary.
Additionally, the minister also criticized the Supreme Court Collegium's decision to make public its decision for reiterating the names recommended for the appointment of judges and the government's objection to some of them. Chief Justice of India, D.Y. Chandrachud, who was also at the same event, later said, and I quote, he has a perception. I have a perception and there is bound to be a difference in perceptions. We have to deal with differences in perceptions even within the judiciary. The reason we put this on the website is in pursuance of the desire of the present collegium to meet the criticism that we like transparency and the genuine belief that opening up our processes will foster confidence in our citizens about the work which we do, unquote. You are listening to Three Things by The Indian Express. Today's show was hosted by me, Rahil Philippos, and written and produced by Utsha Sarman with the help of Shashank Bhadkar. It was edited and mixed by Suresh Pawar. If you like the show, then do subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. You can also recommend the show to someone who you think would like it. Share it with a friend or someone in your family. It's the best way for people to get to know about us. You can also tweet us at Express Podcasts and write to us at podcasts@theRateIndianExpress.com.